Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Let's just start with your background. I want to know a bit about the logistics, where that all started, because ultimately what we want to lead into is the Dubai conversation and how that really sparked Hospitality Chain. Sure. And I guess I should mention before we even truly start is letting the guests and audience know that, you know, hospitalitychain.com is the first official partner of the Fell into Food podcast. So you've probably been hearing it.
We announced it today. I was thinking the same thing. What are we waiting for, right? What are we waiting for?
So it's out there. If you've been listening to episodes, you're hearing at the beginning, you're hearing at the end. You know, we've officially got that partnership. So it's a really exciting time as both of us grow. And people are going to get to learn all about hospitalitychain.com, a lot about you, Ian, and your wife, who I know she's watching in the background, which is exciting. So yeah, so I'm just super excited for this. So let's touch on your logistical background of kind of what that looked like.
I think, you look at now and soon to be the world's number one food podcast. But we're gonna put you on that platform because now you're on 104 pages and you're on the main pages on the right hand side, which takes you to the world. Every category.
Yeah. Yes. And we're gonna get into that, and people are like, what is he even talking about?
So exactly.
Let's go through your quick logistics background, and then I really want to tie that in and jump right into Dubai.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my wife and I, when we got married, she was in freight and logistics, all facets of the industry, air freight, sea freight forwarding, shipping. And then she actually got me into containerization. So that was the company she worked for, needed somebody. She said, I got the perfect man. And so I do have a marine background through my ancestry. I'm the only one that didn't go to sea. But as a kid, I went to sea with my father, and it wasn't for me, just like it wasn't for you in farming. So it was second nature to me, containers. And between my wife and I, we've had 50 years collectively in the freight logistics industry. And today, our oldest boy, he's also in the supply chains, managing a very big region of a sports brand. And so that's the background. And so we know all the facets of it and how we tie in a lot with, I suppose, the hospitality, culinary industries. I was doing domestic container leasing and sales, and I went after big projects of all types, oil and gas, mining, civil, but big events. So I specialized in all the equipment types, refrigerated containers, tank containers. I say tank containers, and you think, what's he talking about? I say tank containers carried everything from tallow to find the finest wines and spirits and that all over the world. So yeah. I specialized in leasing a lot of these tanks for bulk alcohol, waters, things of that nature, and a lot of food processing stuff as well, in pneumatic tanks and things of that nature. And then I basically introduced an easier way to open refrigerated container doors and introduced them to the industry for extra food on big events. So in short, I supplied all the refrigerated containers and dry containers to the Sydney Olympics, the Australian Grand Prix, and I dealt with all the caterers, the big chefs. So when you're talking big events, you're doing everything, especially the Melbourne Cups and things like that. They had well over 100,000 people through in 4 days of racing. Logistically, a nightmare, but we all worked together how to put this whole project together.
Tell everyone too, because you're talking Melbourne, you're talking Sydney. Where are you at? Where are you at in the world, so everyone knows?
Yeah, where am I at right now?
Location-wise?
Well, we live in a place called the Macedon Ranges, 40 kilometres out of the Melbourne GPO, and it's a wine district. It's got a lot of great, mainly boutique wines, but some of the best in Australia are in our region. And one of the best renowned wineries is on a 20-acre straight over the top of the hill from us. We go down to his place. He's known as Bindi. It's a great label. Very expensive label, but he doesn't sell in commercial places. Everybody in the food service, the big restaurants and hotels, they buy everything from him. I can't even get a box off him these days. It's that popular. So that's the region we live in. And it's a real, well, again, hospitality is right in this location and area, you know, because with all good wineries, there's good entertainment and, of course, lodgement, you know, place to dine, sleep, you know, visit just out of the city. And that happens all around the world, you know, Europe, America, I'm sure, you know, plays a very big part, you know, in the wineries. And the hospitality industry is the biggest consumer, without doubt, of alcohol. Let's face it, you know, wine, spirits, it doesn't matter.
All right, we're going to take it back to 2005, a 50th birthday.
Wow.
You end up going to Dubai, right, your 50th. Kath got that for your 50th birthday. Talk about what that was like, one, finding out you're going to go to Dubai, and then how, I guess, kind of how today, you know, and our partnership has kind of started with hospitality chain coming out of that. So maybe tell that story.
Yeah, well, that's probably one of the most fascinating parts of the whole thing. My wife said, you come out for your 50th birthday, you're going to do something special. I said, look, I'm too busy working. She said, well, that's just it. So I said, no, I don't want to party. It's an expensive one night and it's all over. She said, nah, you always wanted to go to the Dubai World Cup. It's a racing. They're mad on their races over there, like racing camels and racehorses. And I've always had a fascination, and I've never been to the Middle East. And I said, you know what? I've known two guys that have gone on this trip over there, said it was the best thing they ever did. So six mates and I, we journeyed over there to celebrate my 50th birthday. And the experiences there, it was more than what I expected, far, far greater. So like I said, as a kid growing up, I used to be fascinated with these black and white movies out in the desert and the desert tents and everything else. And now I'm going to actually see this. So, you know, to experience that, it was amazing. But to cut things short, like when we got into Dubai, then a small trip around the place, and I thought, it's very ritzy, you know. They are planning for when the oil's gone to make it a tourism center of the world. You could see it. And the commercial side. So I dealt with a lot with expats in my time in containers, and so did Kat. And when expats come over, a lot of them stayed, people I was still in business with stayed at our place, and we took them around. And it brings you back to what hospitality is. And when you think about the history of that, we actually got it on our main page now. We've changed it. I love the history. It dates back 5,000 to 7,000 years ago. And right back to the Greeks, the Romans, and of course, the Middle East, the big one, traders and camps. So it's a place of travel, meet, eat, greet, and have a place to sleep. And they're the principles. So I was looking at this trip different to the other people that was actually on the tour, even my friends. I'm looking at them from a logistic point, from what's going on, and wow, the vibe here is amazing. But one night in particular, it was the third night, we went out to dine. To dine under the stars with the sheep that was there as part of the 10th anniversary of this whole thing. This was their big event. And what an event. When we were leaving, we all got on buses, and there's 24 in our tour, so we were on one bus. There was a flotilla of buses coming out of Dubai, and we were stuck in this traffic, and I thought, where's everyone going? And there was stretch limos and everything. They were all heading out to the desert to this great event in the desert. We got out there, and I couldn't believe how many buses were there. I can't get a stat on how many people were there, but it would have been in the thousands. Now, you've been a chef, Jeff. Picture this. How are we going to feed everybody? That's the one thing. The logistics to set up these amazing tents, you know, with the tradition and the culture of the Middle East, like a big Bedouin camp. And when we went through, the culture struck you straight away. There was a line of Bedouin tribal ladies there, all in a row, all decked out. And they had like a long stick, like a bamboo stick, and they were waving the stick, and on the end of it was a dried date. And that's a real cultural thing in the Middle East. So it was a bit like if you looked at the old movies and the women are yodeling, you know, out in the desert, they were doing that. And from the facial masks, there was even full metal masks on. And it was pretty sort of spooky. And they're waving these things and they're passing you the date to take it. And our guide was telling us this is a welcoming thing. And it was an amazing way to enter into the tents. Naturally, you go through a screen. But when we got into the tents, our guys, guide said straight away, when we leave here, you follow me to find the bus. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck in the desert all night. You would never find your way back. This is what it was like. The logistics are going through my mind straight away through, you know, from a logistics point. And this is the biggest event I've ever seen in my life. So out there, you can imagine there's no pollution. You know, there's no lights. There's just stars. A beautiful night, and just, you know, they always have referred to an Arabian breeze. So we go into where we're stationed, and once you're in the tent, you look down, and all the other tents had an open wall where you can see right through. It's like being at a massive expo, and you can see from one tent all the way through to the others. This is how well it was structured. And, of course, they had to have flooring down because you can't go spilling drinking food out in the desert. Just pack up a leaf. It'd be a tip, you know. And, of course, toilet arrangements and everything else that I'm looking at, I'm thinking this is amazing. So we're sitting down on cushions, like being in a Bedouin tent back in the old days. And all of a sudden I thought, wow, what an amazing experience. Until it was time to eat. And it was so military, we just went out to the back of the tent, and each major tent had these long tables, and there was a heap of you guys, chefs in chef's jackets. There was a helpers and that behind them, and without a word of a lie, they had all the cards along what the food was. There was things like hemp, you know, and all the exquisite stuff. This was not just chips and pies and stuff like this. This catering was to a level, as a chef, it was 5-star catering. And you just walked along the table, took what you want, just brought it back, and you could keep going. It was just amazing. And from there, you know, these tents were open at the front. And out the front was an old fort. And in that fort, up the top, all of a sudden this laser show started and there was dancers going to this music. We're sitting there and we thought, this is beyond belief. I've never seen a laser show back in 2005. This blew my mind until the fireworks went off. And I thought, this is, and the stars were out. But the big thing was, is that the main chef, and just trying to think of his name at the moment, he's passed away now, but he set up a dolphin racer. You know, it was Al McToon. He was present. So he'd come on the day to just walk through the tents. And the one thing I noticed, there was nothing there of guns showing or anything like that, or security or police with batons or anything. And I thought, wow, there'd be a lot of security in here, but you're not seeing anything confrontational. And I thought, that's amazing. So there was a lot of bodyguards, including women. They're all dressed the same way, pretty floppy gear, so no doubt they've got, you know, weapons if they need them, hidden. And they were walking with him through the tents. And you wouldn't believe it, one of our people's an older woman, he stopped and spoke to her. She'd pushed her way to the front as he was going past. She got quite emotional about it. And I thought, this is an incredible experience. So when you're looking at travel, tourism, and the culinary world, and fine dining and hospitality, and you guys, all in the one place in the desert, this blew my mind. I thought, this is something else I'll never experience. So from a container point of view, logistical point of view, I'm thinking, my goodness, the amount of work that's gone into this, and I've seen it from the Grand Prix and, you know, the Melbourne Cup, putting all this stuff together, I'm putting in refrigerated containers and working with the catering guys. It's a big job. It's a massive job. And at the end of the night, they had this amazing show on. So being part of the whole experience, you walk out the tent, you can sit down, and at the time, we all were smoking back in them days. We were smoking shisha. The walking people around on camels, the experience was just, they didn't miss one thing. And I thought, the planning to deliver something like this. And then we all just got back on the buses. And thank God we had a guide to get there, because you need a GPS to find your bus. There's a bit of a wait to get out and to get back into the city. But believe me, once we got back in the city, the party didn't stop there. Dubai was alive with a lot of media. The 10th anniversary of this great race was won by an American horse too, by the way, at the time. And an Australian horse won on the same night, a horse called Elstrom. I think it was the American horse for his Roses in May or something like that. I'll never forget it. But you can't bet at the Roses, first racetrack I've been to, and you can't bet. And saying that, there was a lot of Emiratis and a lot of other people walking around with mobile phones just before the race. So I'm sure if they wanted a bet, they would get a bet on. But the same experience on the race night, the hospitality side, the logistics, the food, the beverage. You know, they had some of the finest wines from Europe. And it's a fallacy you can't drink in Dubai. Of course you can. You just don't go out into the street. And you respect the culture, and you behave yourself. If you don't, you know, you're soon to shun the door. It was an amazing place to meet new people. So at all the venues, we went to leading up and during and after the race, we met so many people that we were still in contact with them afterwards. It was, we stayed within a group, and it's just a fascinating time. So that's how things started. And from this whole experience, there's so many expats over there. I couldn't stop thinking about the whole experience and the logistics and the different variation of food there, the various foods and the cultures. I'm starting to think already, how do you bring all this stuff together? And, you know, it's hard to even explain this, let alone walk away from it and think, my God, you know, what have I just experienced? The last day, the friends all went to this hamburger chain. I didn't want to go to no hamburger chain in Dubai. So I went off and do what I do. I love to walk. So everywhere I've traveled in the container industry and remote places, I walked that town in the morning when it was the safest, and I knew how to walk it of a night. I knew where not to walk and where to walk, and I know the terrain. So I found a pretty nice little place and having a shisha pipe. Loved the coffee over there, the dried dates and a small bowl. And I was just listening to two English gentlemen that was just sitting below me. And we're down at a great part where the great hotel is. And fascinating place to sit and just have a look what's going on in the hospitality and logistics and, the tourism. And one of these English guys says, well, it's your turn now. I've spent 2 years here as an engineer. I think with a company called Kinhill, or one of those companies were building all these buildings. Like, a lot of these buildings weren't finished yet. And he said, I'm handing over to you. And he said, one thing. He said, what are you going to miss here? And he said, I'm going to miss a lot of the food, the culture, this great coffee, dried fruits. I'm going to miss a lot of that. So I'd like to take a lot of these experiences, Middle Eastern experiences, back to England with me. And the other guy said, yeah, and I bet you'll miss a lot of the food and experiences from the old English pubs. I said, oh, for sure, without doubt. And Dubai tried to create that too, because there was Irish pubs there, and they're catering for all the expats. So when I got home, I said to the wife, there's a gold bangle from the gold souk. What did we have? Myrrh. And the other thing is the scent frankincense. So you've got gold souks in one part, and there's gold everywhere. And then there's the old spice market. And I got into a lot of trouble because we were supposed to meet one night at the point where we all come back on the bus together. And I got tied up in this spice market and I could not leave. It's just, the time ran away on me. The other guys were in there buying gold and knockoff watches. Vegas, all that stuff went on. So the spice markets took me back hundreds of years ago, like I said, hospitality. 1,000 to 7,000 years old, and it sort of almost took me into that place. Frankincense, myrrh, and gold. The three wise men, that was their presents to Jesus at birth, right? So yep, I bought all that stuff. So when we got back home, I couldn't sleep on the plane. I think I walked from Dubai back to Melbourne. And what I mean is I've got some, spinal issues, lower back. And we were up the back, of course. We weren't sitting flat up the front. I just kept walking around that plane to the point where one of the hostess says, have you got a condition? This is late. I said, yeah, I need to be up the front. I need to fly horizontal. It won't happen. You know, people are in business class, it won't happen. I said, I won't be noisy. I just keep walking around and stretching and everything else, but my mind was still back in that desert. My mind was still back sitting there and walking through that spice market. And I had this food in one mind, I had logistics in another. Actually, my mind blew up. You know, I just I couldn't stop thinking about the experience. So as far as our 50th birthday went, I thank my wife for that. It started a whole lot of things happening, and that was the birth of where we are today. When we first come back, I gave her a present, and I said, I've got another gift for you. She said, what is it? I said, expat deli. He goes, what the hell's that? What is it? I said, I don't know yet. I don't know yet. But we're going to start something. Maybe it might be a franchise of specialty foods and specialty stores in high expat areas around the world. And a lot of them, a lot of expat, gated communities and protected, and, you know, there's, especially in the Middle East. But the specialty stores are around. But I thought expat deli is a great name. So the next morning, I said, we got to register this. She said, your jet lag, don't do a thing. So then I start drawing up a drawing of a palm tree with the sun. She said, what is it? I said, that is neutral to every culture. It's a feel-good thing, palm tree, sun beaming down. Drew it up and got it trademarked not long after. It took us a long time because the trademark, the word expat, it's like trademarking royalty. It is very difficult. And to put it into a place, like it was specialty foods and things like that, like the food and hospitality industry. So we were able to get it. So we still got it, and it's the company today. And I still love that logo. It reminds me of everything that that would go back to all those years in hospitality, you know, palm tree and the sun. So it doesn't matter what culture you are, what country you come from, it's just neutral, and it makes you feel good. So yeah. that becomes, so we didn't go into the franchise. Trading was the next thing, and we had done a little bit of trading, my wife and I, overseas with another friend of ours, and we got very clever, and we're bringing in products for the food industry. We knew for the pizza industry. We knew a girl there that was working in a major distributor. So she said, look, can you do this? So we brought a container of crushed pineapple in and the tomato toppings for pizzas out of Thailand. We had the logistical background. We'd done the training. And we were a bit cheaper than the other producers. Next minute, we get a call from some pretty heavy speaking Italian guy that said, if you keep bringing this in, you'll end up in the crushed pineapple tin. So we decided there's our training experience got right there, right? So I said, we've got to build, I said back in them days, a website to put everything in so people can get on it. Because I was on the website all the time, or online. I couldn't find a website. There was a lot of food websites, but oh my goodness, it's like being in a butcher shop or a supermarket, and it was ugly. They're just ugly things. So, you know, I buy a pole and I thought, I can't look at these sites, and they weren't around. They no longer, you know, they wanted to be everything, selling shoes and toys and sausages. You know, we need to develop something now that people could go to, but I didn't want to put any commercial food, let's call it junk. I did not want to put junk food on there. I wanted it to be a specialized platform, you know, of just the finest premium foods, the hard to get, the artisan. And believe me, like in the Middle East, you know, the chocolates, the artisan chocolates over there, it's a real skill and it's a big thing over there. And I thought, wow. And she said, look, you're mad. And I said, I know, but it's up here and I've got to unpack it and it's going to take a long time. We've got to trademark these things. We've got a copyright. So you wouldn't believe it. When we first started putting it together, 4 years later, 5 years later, we're back in Dubai at Gulf Food as Expat Deli exhibiting at probably the biggest expo in the world. It was just simply amazing, the size of this expo. I got lost there. I said, look, I'm going to get out and walk the floor. 6 hours later, I come back, and the wife said, I'm starving. We're just in a little thing with a couple of brochures up the back of the thing. Expat Deli. But the one thing that really sold things to us, there was a big chef, Chef Codon. He was just walking around, and he was doing a lot of guest speaking and that, apparently. And he's either, I think, Dutch or German. He's a big guy, but on his chef's jacket, he had a lot of badges on that. And he wanted to tell us how good he was in the world as a chef, as a decorated chef. I wish I had remembered his name, because he's looking at the brochure at the back. He said, Expat Deli, what is it? And I said, that's a good question. And what is it? I said, the simplest way to explain it, this whole expo, every exhibitor, the fine food, all the equipment, the beverages, but only the top end, not the commercial stuff. We're going to put it in a laptop. You're going to what? I said, we're going to put it in a laptop. He said, listen, my friend, keep going with that, because one day I don't want to come back to any more expos. He said, quite frankly, I'm over them. They're hard work. It's just too hard, and the travel and everything. So you're telling me one day I'm going to sit down in my lounge room and with my office at home, drinking a red, sitting on my computer on your site, and I'll be able to buy or bring in any specialty foods from around the world? And I said, well, yeah, that's the concept. Good luck. I hope you're successful. So that's where it sort of started from. So, you know, that was the foundation and the story. And then when I started getting into the history of how old hospitality is, end of the day, Jeff, the principles are still the same. They're simple. The principles are simple. But naturally, you know, online and everything else now, it's survived. It's probably one of the most durable industries in the history of life. That go to a place, traders go to a place, and they're greeted with a smile. And they're given a place, a safe place to sleep, place to eat. They'd like to entertain them at the same time and look after them. And that's basically hospitality today. It's changed, as we know, but the principles are pretty much the same. You know, the various foods and of course, the innovation of equipment, that all changes. And the hotel networks throughout the world, they change. But the principles are there. They're still pretty similar.
Yeah. Well, when you go to another country, or most people, when they're wanting to have their vacation, if you will, that what are the things they want to see? They want to usually go somewhere where the weather is to their liking, and or they want to enjoy the food, right? How many, it was for me, the big reason going to Italy was not, yes, I was lucky enough to go for work, but I wanted to experience the culture and the food and see what it was all about. Right. Even if I did nothing else, I've said time and time again, if I just get to eat the food and experience that, because you can understand culture through food, right? Because you see the experiences, you go into the restaurants or the home cooking, whatever it may be, you get an experience, you get a feel what that country's about. And that has always been the case in the hospitality industry, And that's what we emulate, right? In the restaurant, we want to emulate a location and environment in which is inviting, and you want to come in and you want to be there. You want to converse. You want to be what humans were meant to do to socialize.
Yeah.
And that's what hospitality is all about. Yeah. You know, so you had this amazing trip out in Dubai, had your brain thinking, you start a website. And again, 2005, you're coming out of the dot-com bubble, you know, five years earlier and sure. Websites and people, you know, they weren't really probably where they're nowhere where they are today. However, you still had that idea in the back of your head. And like you said, you had to unpack it and you had to kind of figure out what it was. And it's evolved, you know, over the years. And, you know, as we met and have been going through it, I mean, there's been an evolution over the past even 6 months. So I think it's good to let people know too, you know, we're going to dig more into the website and we know it's a connector of different brands. I mean, everything. I mean, there's so much on the website. We could spend another 3 hours going through all the sectors and everything easily. Right.
Yeah.
But maybe call it, I believe in divine intervention, but kind of how our paths intertwined, you know, what made you, it all happened through LinkedIn, maybe just on, you know, what made you spark that conversation? And then, you know, I'll, you know, on the flip side, tell my side of it as well.
Look, that's an easy one. And I hate this comment all the time. That's a good question. I'm sick of hearing it. That's a bloody good point, Jeff. LinkedIn. I wasn't a great user of LinkedIn in the container industry because, quite frankly, I didn't want other people in the container industry to know what I was doing. I used to fly in under the radar and go after big projects and, I did that silently. But what we're doing now, we have to be out there, right, in all the socials, and that's a big part of it. But the one thing is, and this is way back, and this is where, you know, I drive my wife mad sometimes, my co-founder, she does the operational side of things, always has. Like I said, you do all the, when I think of a .com, I want you to register it, right? You do GoDaddy. I don't know how to even get onto it, GoDaddy. So we've got about 40 domains and URLs. And I woke her up one night at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm awake. I'm an insomniac. My mind's ticking all the time. You're going to end up that way now because you're an entrepreneur.
No. The best ideas come when you're like, it's the worst. I'll be in a shower and an idea hits and you're like, oh my God, I need my phone. I need to write this down. It happens all the time. It's in the worst timing possible where I'm doing something. The light bulb goes off and it's nothing related, but I know what you mean.
You're in trouble now. You better start seeing somebody to do some meditation so you don't end up in insomnia. Most entrepreneurs, I call them visionaries because we knew nothing about tech at all, right? My wife and I, but I'm not going to get off the topic. How we met on LinkedIn is that when I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I said, I got a light bulb moment. I want you to get on GoDaddy. She said, it's 3:30 in the morning. I said, I know, but what happens if it goes? She said, what is it? Chefsbiography.com. She said, you are totally mad. You know that. I said, I'll be mad if I don't get it. She gets up. She talks to it. She comes back. She says, I'm up for sleep. Check the spelling. I said, you know, I can't spell. So checked it on the iPad. I said, hey, it's there. So we got it. And she said, well, what's chefsbiography.com? I said, I want to get specialty chefs. And I want to tell their story because I find them really interesting people. And I mean that because I've known a few chefs myself. They remind me of guys, and I've had these friends too, that are transport truck drivers, drive big rigs, and they're doing long haul from one side of the country to the other. It's painstaking. They don't get to get out and have leisure time every weekend and just do what other people do. I found chefs and people in hospitality don't get a lot of sun. It's a hard grind. It's hard work. And I find them, they have to have a lot of passion, and it's low paying, as we know, for the general people that work in hospitality. But they have a passion for food. I have a passion for food. You know, I cook, and when I'm in the mood. And my wife's an exceptional cook, being a Greek. It's part of Greek culture. They love to cook, right? So, you know, but I wanted to, and I wanted to put the chef's biography together and see their stories, how they start. They're all different. You know, you have a look at the experiences they go through, and no doubt it's a very, very hard game. Not everybody stays in it, and others stay in it all their life. But they were starting to, chefs were starting to, back then, jump out of the kitchen into the fire of doing something outside the kitchen. They were becoming, all of a sudden, you know, they were becoming the new stars on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. And books and interesting stories. And, you know, I used to love watching those shows where they tour around the world, you know, and just going to places, and we know who those guys are, you know, and showing real food and cultured food. And I wanted to, I didn't want to have all Michelin hatted chefs. So at the start, a lot of the chefs we had on there, everybody knew. So I thought, you know, what things are changing at hyperspeed in this industry, in the hospitality industry, and the speed of online. And I wanted to look and find interesting chefs, younger chefs as well, you know, male and female, all cultures. And some would stand out to me, that person's got a point of difference. Now, then I contact them. Not all of them wanted to come on. Others, oh, I'd love to be on there. So for some reason, I love authentic brands. And I was on LinkedIn, it was back in October, I remember. So we're into the third quarter of last year. So we've only known each other in a very short period of time, Jeff.
Yep.
And I seen you on LinkedIn. I seen a couple of times you on LinkedIn. And and this is serious. This is not trying to make a story here. Jeff Fell. I went to school with Jeff Fell. I've never told you that. And where I grew up, there was a family of nine in the Fell family, and they lived not far from me. I played football with them in sports, and actually Jeff Fell was in my grade right back then. And I thought, Jeff Fell, for some reason, I just looked at it, and then it said, Fell into food. And I thought, you know what? I love brands. Authentic brands. I don't like big commercial brands. They remind me of junk. And it's all about the dollar. It's all about the margin. It's not about people. To me, it doesn't represent much. Big commercial brands. I'm not going to name them. We'd be there all day. So that stood out. And I thought, here's a young chef. I'm going to get on and read about it. And I read that you had a farmer background, and yeah, you were pretty raw with, you know, where you come from, what you've done, and the letdown in the corporate industry. I know what that's all about. You know, a lot of people that can be listening to this will know what that's about.
Mm-hmm.
It's about all about the dollar. It's not about the person. How much can I get out of them? It's like a lemon. They'll cut it up. They'll squeeze it, juice it as hard as they can, and they'll throw it on the floor. Stamp on it to get that last bit of juice out. Some people say, I've had enough. I'm jumping out of the pan into the fire, and I thought, I'm going to contact this guy. And I seen you had a podcast, and you were just starting. Your brand. I love the microphone in a corn cob. I thought, this has got a point of difference here. this guy's interesting and he's at the right age group and everything else. I contacted you and said, I'm sure we can collaborate. And that's what you do on LinkedIn. Not all collaborations are good. We found a few that aren't. Without going into too much, we put a few equipments up and not equipment, so foods up and a few things. They got about 3 months advertising and quite a few hundred things. I thought, enough's enough. They're not paid, so they move on. And other collaborations are great, you know, especially with the chefs. So now we've got quite a few chefs, and this has only been in the last 12 months, which actually are submitting articles of interest of the culinary industry, to the point that we got another .com called, I think it's Culinary News or something.com. It's one of those, but it's a good .com. And it's on the chef's biography. So chefs and the culinary world can post articles up on that. It's chefsarticles.com. So those articles, they actually bring a fair bit of traffic because they're interesting stories. And some of these chefs, and especially the younger ones, they're right into nutrition. And we can see a seismic shift now in food. I think we're starting to see it, to get back to real food, right? And it's driven by chefs, and it's driven by passionate people that want to make people healthier through food and nutrition. And there are many chefs now just starting to branch out and do different things. And then there's still those wonderful chefs that, you know, we've got chefs on there that are so creative in their artistry and what they do as a chef. And we've got a few of them on there. And we've got chefs from all around the world from different cultures that actually are giving us recipes now. You've got one up there. You're on Chef's Biography as well. Because of that point of difference, I thought I'd like to have you up on there. So you're on Chef's Biography, tell your story. And when you become the world's number one podcast, which you're fast becoming, for the hospitality industry and fine food and everything else, or the industry itself, I'm going to say, wow, he's on Chef's Biography, that guy. And we're also partnership in what we do.
Yeah, so, I want to touch on LinkedIn just briefly and the power that it can be if it's used properly. I see so many people on that platform that it's become another social network where they just try to sell it. It's sleazy. It's just not a good place to be. Whereas before it was very prestige. That's the place you go if you want to do business.
Yeah,
and what I have found is, like, to your point, I'm constantly on there. I'm looking, seeing who's on there. If I see a dish that a chef has done, or I see someone writes an article and it's really well, I connect with them. I want to see more of that. That's why I'm connecting. But what's interesting, and I found through connecting with some people, is that a lot will instantly say, "What do you want?"
Hey.
And I simply reply back, I don't want anything. I like what you're doing. I want to see more of it. So can I connect with you?
Yeah.
Now, that may lead to something in the future because they see something I do or I see something they do. And again, the hospitality industry is all about connections and who you know and how you can connect people, right? And there may not be that immediate return on investment of your time, but you don't know what's going to happen in a year or 2 years or 3 years or somebody that you've worked with or something that happened and all of a sudden the paths align. And that's exactly what you said, is you reached out and I was like, all right, let me look at his website, see what he's got. And I said, what does it hurt to have a conversation?
Yeah, sure.
And I know people value their time, but at the same time, I was like, you know what? I'm going to have to explore all doors, explore all possibilities and see, you know, if somebody's willing to have that kind of level of depth of interest, let's have a conversation. And then just progress and just you and your wife, good people. And you can tell good people, when you find good people, you want to do things with them. Again, whether that's right up front, whether it's in the future, whether it's just staying connected, you don't know where it's going to lead. And I had no idea that this kind of partnership was going to happen. I had no idea, no clue, no nothing. you know, I told my whole story on episode 56, and now we're in a stage where I think 2026 is like the year where things start to happen. Things are clicking, you know, and all that hard work that people talk about of you work your butt off and you see nothing for years, and then all of a sudden it clicks, and then it just happened. So it was just interesting. And plus like Ozzy, I love the accents. I mean, it's just hard not to want it. Oh yeah. I absolutely love the accents. So it's like, yes, I get to talk with people that have, you know, the accent.
Yeah.
And so now here we are today, you know, partnering up, and, you know, yeah, you've got so many facets to the website. We've got the chef's biographies, there's equipment, there's food, there's a whole lot. And again, I think the goal today was really to kind of tell that backstory of who you were, because I'm sure we'll have more conversations because there's so many pieces to
there's a lot
to the website. There's so much to unpack and what the website has to offer. You know, maybe talk just a little bit about the website and how one does interact with it, right? With all the facets, you know, button it up the best. I don't know, it's hard to put it in simple terms, but
basically simplify it. Our friend, as we all know, AI, you know, has told us basically to simplify. It said, and this is what we set out to do right from the start. Okay, the search engines, you get on a search engine, you get out of that, you get into this, you get into that, you get into. I wanted to centralize everything, every facet of hospitality, everything, and then interact with the logistics on another platform. You can click from one to the other. And it become a one-stop marketplace to be an asset to the World Wide Web. Now, to make it easy is that it can't be just a bunch of websites, okay? It's boring, okay? It's just simply boring. You need to have people come on and start searching through that are actually in the game. And right now, we made a lot of changes, but we've got so much, I suppose, gold prospectors, and I love watching those shows. Parker's one of my favorite people in that gold sector. He's young, he's vibrant, and he's out there, he's innovative. But they all look for virgin ground to mine, that it hasn't been mined before. And that's where probably the big payloads are that they're looking for. So it's a bit like our site. So the more raw data we have on those platforms, the more traffic you're going to get coming to you. Now, I've been told many times, AI, it's the end of you. There's a death now. I said, no, it's not. It actually is a good friend of mine, and we're a good friend of AI. Is over our platforms virtually every minute of the day because it's looking for data. We've got about 60,000 products and services. In equipment alone, we've got close to 5,000 culinary and hospitality equipment on there. Now, if you picked up 5,000 of that equipment and put it into an expo, you wouldn't get it in there. Be too much, you know. So we put it, like I said to that chef, I put it into an iPad. But we're moving at hyper speed now, the whole world, and we need dedicated industry platforms. It's a must. So when bots go in, right from the start, what we wanted to do is have the main categories of hospitality, the subcategories that come off that. Before you know it, things were just blowing up like, wow, we got to add this like vegan and other, you know, things like biodynamic. Now, if I had a hero subcategory on the site, if you ask me, what's your hero subcategory or category, it'd be biodynamic. Those farmers, I've got to take my hat off. The world should go back. And that's the old way of farming, right? The biodynamic way. And that's where you know, that food and everything is going to improve people's health. You know, if they went back eating like that, you know, we wouldn't have half the, you know, problems today. But, you know, so things as they unwind in front of you, you know, like you said, like woven moments, you know, you're building something. Then I'm thinking of, you know, the charities, food, shelters, and there's a lot of, like a lot of industries, but the people I knew in hospitality, they really struggled during the pandemic. So the wellness part of things, you've got to take great respect and of that. So we built our hospitality charities, and it's a worldwide platform or website. I've just got to say .com, but it's just around food banks, shelters, homelessness, and wellness, but no advertising or anything on that site at all. It's a genuine non-for-profit, and we only try to put non-for-profits on that particular site. So off topic a little bit, but, you know, it's not just a site to be out there to say, ah, this is going to be a money site or whatever. We want to be serious and about what we do. And the charitable side, I think, you know, philanthropy, like people that have got money can go on there and actually see the brand. And there's one out there now. We spoke about the Burnt Chef. I've sent them an email. I haven't had a reply back, but I'd like to put them up there. And hopefully people can, with money that want to spend it, can get on there and start donating to those charities, especially homeless and people that food banks that are really struggling to feed themselves in this day and age. So that's one facet there that we really want to grow. But like I said, there's no commercial or ads on that. It's purely we host it. And we want to put it out there again as a platform where people can go and search. Or if they're in need of help, they might be able to go to the wellness part and think, who can help us? My wife and I are actually on a board that you know, gets free counselling to help people with addictions, not the addicts, but the mums and dads and the, you know, brothers and sisters that are struggling and can't afford counselling. So I suppose that thing started there where we said, you know, we've got to do something there to be a one-stop platform there to give brand of, well, awareness to the not-for-profits side of things there. So, there, yeah, there's a lot to digest, and it can get off topic pretty quick when you're going through the whole platform. But for it to work, the bots, because it's categorized, main category, subcategory, and it's very readable for bots, good bots. There's bad bots in the world, but I do not have a problem with good bots coming across scraping our platforms at all, because we work together. Now, if they're finding us, then we know that the world's buying on us. We're actually getting weekly visits now. We've done the stats last night. The countries, up over 220 countries now, 195 countries in the world. Here's a stat for you, like, there's 380 million websites in the world. Now, just think of this for the moment. The stat is that there's about 33,000, I'm just reading that stat off my sheet as we go, because I don't want to muck it up, that are registered per day. Per day. But outside of that, new websites per day is 250,000 new websites per day. Why is there more websites per day than actually registering for a domain name? Because a lot of domains and are actually parked. Someone knows that, well, I need to get a domain. Jeff fell into food. I better get that .com. And it's no good having .net, .org, .whatever. It's .com. It's the most frequently used around the world rather than country. That's where it starts. How is your business, how does Jeff Fell Into Food or Fell Into Food podcast get itself out there straight away to be known and recognized? And believe me, from your first podcast to now, I just see how much it's grown where, you know, I love listening to it because, you know, you've got the confidence, you've got some great people in there and you grow with it. It's as simple as that. And you know your background. You know where you come from, the farm. And that's a grind. You went into, you got the passion as a chef. You've done all that. You've done all the management. Now you're out there and the first thing I said to you, so when we got together, what are you going to do, Jeff? He says, I don't really know. Throwing balls up in the air. And I said, there goes the life of an entrepreneur, you know, and a visionary. You might have a vision, but your wife will say, how do we make money? I don't know yet. But we've got to work a way that we try to get to make a monetary, right? So, or monetize it, as you say.
Yeah, it goes back to the mantra. And I guess first, thank you for all those kind words. I appreciate it.
No, it's just true.
And I go back too, and I look at some of the first stuff to where I am now. It's all practice, right? Everything you do is practice and you have to do it. But what I was going to originally say is that I always had this mantra and I kind of got away from it for a little while. I don't know why. It was always in the back of my mind is that if you chase money, you're going to constantly chase money. When you stop worrying about it as much and you do the right thing, whatever that might be, it finds you and then it comes to you. And it's ironic how that happens. And sometimes it may feel like despair where you're like, well, I'm scraping by. I don't know what I'm going to do. And then all of a sudden, whew, out of nowhere, it comes. But that's if you're doing consistently the right thing, that those things happen to you. And so that's where I feel is kind of on that journey, on that roller coaster of trying to get there. And to your point, it's a different. As an entrepreneur, some people, hey, I'm going to do this, I'm going to sell that, whatever it might be. But for me, it was all about, like you, I feel like I like connecting people. I've always had a knack for like, hey, I know somebody, let me connect you. No benefit to me except that I want to help the people that I know that need whatever support, services, products, etc. Hey, I know somebody. And it still happens to today is somebody will say, yeah, I'm looking for this. And I'm like, I know somebody that I'm happy to make an introduction to email. And if it works out, great. If it doesn't, okay, that's okay too, but it doesn't hurt to explore. So kind of being that can do it. And I feel that hospitality chain, I think that's what made me levitate towards it was that it's a giant connector. And we're talking, like you said, hundreds of countries, thousands of cities, you know, so I guess what I'm trying to say is that if you're a chef, if you're a buyer, if you are looking for products and you don't know where to start, this is a great place. This is where you can start to go there, dig into a country. And it's very granular. If you're looking for a specific region and a specific producer, you can find all that in a credible source. And that's the other thing. It's a credible source because as much as we love AI, I was actually using it today and it pulled up something and told me something. I go, you're not right. No, this is wrong. Like flat out, I was like, you are wrong. And it came back and it was like, actually, you're right. I am wrong. And I was like, yeah, I know that you're wrong. So I need the right information. Where you have a credible website with credible information, that allows you to know that what you're going to pull or what you're looking for, you don't have to worry about, okay, this is some knockoff. And to your point, especially with the food stuff, it's more artisan. It's not the big brands. It's not mass producers. This is the small guys that are trying to put their products out and they have finite amount of time and resources to do marketing and put stuff out. And especially from a global standpoint, I know a lot of stuff is coming hyper local and regional. However, you still need the world in order to make things happen.
Yeah,
exports are just a part of it. So I wanted to say all that. We're coming up on time.
Just give you the last point. I'll give you the last point, which I missed, and it's a big point. And I'm glad we've got to this point, and we are hitting time like this won't be our last episode because we've got so much more to discuss about a whole lot of topics, of course. But it's the producers, the growers, and everything else. I don't believe that online advertising has to be expensive. Is what it is. It's just too expensive. Now, these smaller people, they can't go into supermarkets. One, they don't want to. They want the food service industry. They can't afford supermarkets. They're taking too much profit out of them. So what's left for them? Okay. For the small people, and especially in the wine industry, you know, I'd love to stick all the wine in great wineries around the world. We could put a premier listing in their category, their region, everything about them, give them a premier listing, 1,000 words, free photos, and it'd cost them about one glass of wine a week. We could do that. The bigger the companies are, more commercial, they want, you know, prominent positions, it's a different, cost there, of course. But they're big commercial companies with equipment and all that. I'm talking about the small artisan people. We're there to support the industry, biodynamic farming, and then and all the good stuff that, you know, back to the food that's important for people's health and everything. And we'd like to put them all on at a rate that they can afford, but without being ridiculous. So at times, you know, it takes us 5 to 6 hours to do the work to put a premium listing on. And they've got their logo. And you know yourself, your brand and your logo is who you are and what your product is. We can get their logo out there to the world on a world market. And we don't take commissions. If anybody's buying off the site, we know plenty of people are buying off the site. We know a few people that. And all they just say, where do you find us? Online. A couple of people we know have said, hey, they actually found us on your site. Which is good. Good feedback. But so we don't click to tell. It's between the producer and the buyer. They connect. They decide whether I like your product, send it over to me, let me have a look at it. It saves a hell of a lot of time and energy. We know that they're going to get traffic. And we thank AI for that too, because I'm not going to mention our page, weekly page. Searches, but they're extremely high. And each week, as we've been doing our SEO, more we're doing it ourselves because we paid a lot for SEO. And I get in there and I think that is pretty ordinary. And it's over Amber Light, so good enough will do. So you know, we learned the hard way, paying a fortune for all this stuff. So we've invested and done it ourselves and done it properly. And we're nearly at the completion of the back end of hospitality, and we can sort of see that the bot activity is just taking our search now to another level. And the amount of cities that are, to be honest. So it's a cheap way to get out there. You're on there every minute of the day. You're not there sometimes, not another time. Every minute of the day you've got exposure. You tell us what market, so you're not going through a bot. So how do I get my ad up there? You're actually talking to real people. So we're designing that ad around you. What you want. I only want a local market here, and this is the market I'm looking for, right? Just in my state, my province, or my country, I want international exposure. I want to expand my brand. So that's how flexible you can be. And like I said, we're not taking 10% out of this or whatever. They're selling the product. So we connect and manufacture to the buyer, the producer to the buyer. So as you know, a cliche we use, you know, select, buy direct, say, it's up to you.
Yep. I was going to say, where do people... Oh, yeah, for sure. I was going to say, normally I close it out with the where do you find them, but all you got to do is just listen to this podcast and you're going to know exactly where to find them at hospitalitychain.com. 100%. So you can always go there, or if you want to know more information, guess what? You go to hospitalitychain.com and you can get more information and you can find more information.
Exactly.
So that's where you're going to go. Ian, I know we've had so many conversations, and again, there are so many things to unpack. I know I want to do logistics. I know I want to do specialty stuff and charities. I mean, there's just so much with the last you guys
one,
do.
And this is really the last one that we should think about too. And it's going to play an amazing part of everything now, because the world's changing. The banks are going to get left behind if they don't do something about it. And the fintech, you'll be able to buy things from a site, say like equipment, container, wine or whatever. Three clicks of a button, bang, bang. You know, letter of credit in freight. So rather than go down the bank, you've got to get a bank guarantee and this and that. Payment gateways, you know. Those things can all plug into this, and then it becomes more than a directory site. You are buying and the buy now, pay later thing. Reality is just massive in that sector, and that's coming quick. So there's a lot of things, and to talk on the podcast, it's going to be a very interesting session there on those things alone. What actually drives and makes it, and what takes us into the next 5 years.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Couldn't have said it better. Ian, love having our chats. Yeah, love seeing you, buddy. Have a great day. It's an evening for me. You're just getting the day rocking and rolling and started.
Hey, it's been a good start to the day, Jeff. I appreciate it. This is our first podcast. Won't be the last. I love what you do, and it's not just plugging you. I think it's well needed. But I love that brand. I know you didn't design it. Your wife did. Don't have a sacker. I can't sack mine. I'd be lost. So, well done, mate. And so keep going, eh?
Love it. Appreciate it. Appreciate you. Appreciate Kath. And until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side. HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.